If you are trying to land a new job and your job search currently feels broken, you're applying, you're not getting interviews, or you're going on interviews and you're not hearing back, while there are many different things that can influence how broken your job search is, one of them is definitely the way you talk about and present yourself in your job search. So in this episode, I'm sharing the mistakes that women make when talking about themselves that can keep them from getting an offer, and sharing two ways to talk about your experience so you finally get hired. Welcome to the Fulfilling Career Podcast, a show for the professional woman who is stuck in a career that is draining the life out of her, has no idea what else she could do, and has been waiting for things to change for way too long. I'm Dr. Tega Edwin, a career counselor and coach who went from being unhappy in a job that drained me, sitting in a windowless office, wondering if this is all my life was really meant to be about, to building a career I've genuinely loved and thrived in for over 12 years now. I know what it feels like to go from drained and stuck at work to doing work that genuinely lights you up and fulfills you, and I'm here to help you do the same. Whether you're ready to pivot into a whole new career path or step into the role and recognition you've already earned in your career, this is where you are going to get clear on who you are, what fulfillment looks like for you, and how to make it happen with faith as the foundation. Let's dive in. Hello, hello, wonderful listener. Welcome back to another episode of the Fulfilling Career Podcast. If you are someone who is in the world of work and you're online right now, I'm sure that you have probably somewhere, somehow seen conversations around how hard the job search is for people right now. Like literally everywhere I go, I'm seeing it, whether it's on Threads, on TikTok, on LinkedIn. I'm seeing people talk about searching for months, even years for some, getting rejected immediately after applying for a job, not hearing back, getting ghosted. The fact is that the job search is broken. Okay. In general, the system of how we get jobs has been broken, frankly, since technology entered this space. So for years now. And at the same time, I've worked with enough women to know that sometimes your approach to the job search is also broken, because a lot of, when I think of the women that I'm currently working, a lot of people are using tactics that maybe would have worked in 2008, 2016, even 2020. They're trying to use those tactics now in 2026. And when we are in a different economy and a different market, the approach to job searching also has to be different, which is why I'm going through these episodes sharing different ways that you can fix your broken job search and think about job searching differently. And I love, like, one of the problems I love helping women solve is how to job search better to quickly land a job without applying to hundreds of jobs, without burning out, without losing your dignity and your confidence in the process. Because yes, job searching can be hard, but I think it is even more so difficult when you don't have the right strategy to approach the job search. And I'll also say, this is even more so true if you are a mid-career woman. So if you are at like that between 10 and 20 years in your career, that's what I mean by mid-career. You've been working for 10 to 20 years. You have different experiences. That means your approach to job searching cannot be like an early career person, and it can't be like a senior person either, because you're in that messy middle. And so you have to differ how you talk about your work and how you approach your work, because getting ghosted when you know that you have the years of experience to back up the jobs you're applying for is very frustrating. And so when we look at the job search process, one of the reasons why your job search is probably broken right now is how you are talking about your experiences. It is so important to recognize that job searching is all about marketing. Job searching is a marketing game, not a qualifications game. So contrary to popular beliefs, we think it's the qualifications that get us hired, which is why when you don't get the job and you're like, but I was overqualified, but I had all the qualifications, that's why you're frustrated. You went in with the wrong mindset and message. You thought your experiences alone would speak for themselves, or your background or your pedigree would speak for itself. Baby, no, 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 no. Job searching is a marketing game. Marketing is all about how you talk about yourself, because you can have the right experience and skills and still not get job offers because how you talk about your experience isn't landing with the hiring manager or the recruiter who can move you forward to the hiring manager. Job searching is all about the ways in which you present yourself, present your skills, present your experiences, and present your fit for the role. So in this episode, I'm going to share with you how you can talk about your experience so that you get hired. But first, I'm going to share the two biggest mistakes that I see women make when they're job searching that might keep them from landing a job because they're talking about their experiences wrong. I'll talk about those two mistakes first, and then I'm going to share two specific ways and places where you need to talk about your experiences in very unique ways to help you market your fit for the role. So the first mistake that I usually see women making in how they talk about their experience is underselling their experiences. Remember that I just said job searching is a marketing game. If you are underselling something, you are not enticing the person on the other end to want it. Like, have you ever seen an ad where, let's say it's an ad for a pair of shoes, and they're like, you know, these shoes are okay. They'll kind of sort of get you where you need to go. Consider buying one because it might work. It also might not work. It might hurt your feet, but I think that it wouldn't hurt your feet. Like, do you have any desire to buy those shoes? Like, is there any part of that was enticing to you? The answer is likely no. When you hear ads, they're telling you that this thing is going to change your life and change the way you see the world and fix your relationships and fix everything about your life. And you need to be able to do your version or variation of that when you're marketing. But what I often see is women are underselling their experiences. And that usually happens for one of two reasons. The first reason that you might undersell your experience is simply socialization. Okay. Women are often socialized to be humble, to minimize their experiences. And this is why you find yourself saying phrases like, I helped with, or the team did most of the work, or it wasn't a big deal. I just kind of threw it together. You are minimizing the impact of what you have done because you don't want to brag. That's a big one. I just want to be humble. I don't want to brag. Meanwhile, firstly, if there was ever a perfect time that you needed to brag, it is during the job search. The job search is your time to brag. It is your time to talk your ish, right? Talk your stuff, say what you need to say about yourself and how you're going to come in and clean everything up for them in that company. But I also understand, especially from a faith perspective, right? We know that pride goeth before fall. You don't want to appear prideful. And so here's what I really want you to hear. Stating what you did is not bragging. It is simply stating facts. Let me say that again in a different way. Talking about what you have done in your career is not bragging. It is simply stating facts. Like, I know I have worked with clients before who, when we're putting their resume together, they'll be like, well, the team did most of the work, or the team handled this. It wasn't just me. And I'm like, okay, but you were leading the team though, which means indirectly anything the team was able to accomplish can be tied to you and your leadership. Right? Like, if somebody else were leading this team, they might not have operated as fluidly together, as effectively, or had the same outcomes. And talking about what you contributed to the team, talking about how what you contributed led to better outcomes, is not synonymous with you taking credit for everything the team did. But somehow in our minds, we always conflate the two and we're like, oh, I don't want to take somebody else's credit. Baby girl, please. Talk about what you have done, because that is one way that you can help recruiters and hiring managers see the value that you are bringing to the table. Then the second reason why you might be underselling your experience is simply because your confidence is shot, right? You have low confidence. When you are in a broken job search, there's a high chance that you have been applying to jobs and you're either not hearing anything back or you're getting ghosted. And the more you are job searching and you're not getting the outcome you want, you're getting rejection after rejection, that starts to cause your confidence to go down because you start doubting if you even have value to bring to the table. Like, you start questioning your own skills and your own worth because you have heard so many people say no to you for so long that it now shapes how you talk about yourself. Okay. It shapes how you talk about yourself. And so if you are in this situation where one of the reasons why you are underselling your experience is because you think, well, nobody has taken me so far. I've been hearing no. So maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was. I want you to just replace that mindset. You are as good as you thought you are. You are qualified. Rejection is simply somebody else's opinion about what they are looking for. Rejection is not a fact about you or your skill set, and don't make it that. Don't internalize it. Recognize that you can get rejected for literally anything under the sun. In fact, let me tell you the story. I recently saw a LinkedIn post where a researcher shared that she had posted on LinkedIn, and she asked recruiters to tell her the most ridiculous reasons why hiring managers had turned down a candidate. And then she shared the screenshots of those reasons. When I tell you that these truly were the most ridiculous reasons, I mean it. Let me give you some examples. One said the hiring manager said he didn't like the way she drank tea. Another said they rejected someone because she was too pretty and it would be distracting for the team. Somebody else got rejected because she was not beautiful enough and it did not represent the organization well. Somebody said they rejected someone because she looked vegan. I'm assuming it's a she. They might not all have been she's in terms of, I'm just using that pronoun. But it said this person looked vegan and they didn't want to deal with that BS. Can you imagine that? Like, there were more ridiculous reasons, but the tea one really stood out to me and blew my mind. And I think it's particularly because I am a tea drinker. Like, literally right now, as I am sitting here at my desk recording this episode, I have a cup of peppermint tea in my hand. I drink at least 3 cups of tea daily. So hopefully you can see what I mean when I say you can't let rejection get to you, because rejection is rarely ever about your value or your skills. There are just things that are beyond your control. Let me give you another example from the other side of the table. I've been on multiple hiring teams before. There was one time when we were hiring for a role, we had 2 finalists. They were both qualified. We interviewed both. They both could do the job. And when it finally came down to the decision for who to hire, ultimately one of those candidates had an area of expertise and a skill set that none of us on our team had. And we knew that that would be an additional value to come to the team. The other candidate would never have had that, would never have known that, first of all, because we didn't tell her that was the reason and we're not allowed to. But my point here is there was nothing she could have done to control that. Somebody else just happened to have something that she did not. That is how I want you to think about the job search. If you have been job searching and it feels so broken because you're not getting the results you want, don't let that rejection kill your confidence. Don't turn that rejection inward and start telling yourself that you're not qualified enough or that you don't have the skill sets because you do. Don't internalize it, because then it leads to you underselling yourself when you do move forward in the job search process.
Hey, if you are unhappy in your career right now, whether you are not sure what your next move is, you've tried to make a change and it hasn't worked, or you just know something needs to shift, but you don't know where to start, I want to invite you to schedule a free career clarity call with me. On this call, we'll get to the root of what is keeping you stuck in your career, and I will show you the 3 specific ways I can help you hit your career goals. You can go to hercareerdoctor.com/call to schedule your career clarity call today. Now let's get back to the episode.
And then I know I had said there are 2 reasons for underselling, but as I was talking, I thought about a 3rd one that I want to share, which is that sometimes your work feels very ordinary to you. And this can particularly be a mid-career problem, because when you have been doing your work for so long, for 10 or more years, you start to be able to do a lot of these things in your sleep. So you start telling yourself things like, I just do my job. Anybody can do this. Oh, it was no big deal. You are essentially underselling your experiences, or you don't talk about certain things because you're telling yourself it's just part of the job. Everybody can do it. And I'm saying this because I have had multiple clients say those exact words to me. Oh, everybody can do that. And I'm like, no, if everybody could do it, everybody would be doing it, but everybody is not doing it. So everybody cannot do it. Right? So sometimes you undersell yourself because you are underselling, or I should say, minimizing your work, because it just feels ordinary, like what you were hired to do, like it's no big deal. But you really need to talk yourself up when you are job searching if you want to move further in the process. And then the 2nd mistake that I usually see women making when it comes to how they talk about themselves that can keep them from getting hired, which leads to a broken job search, is that you often talk about the jobs you have had in the past as opposed to talking about the job that you are trying to land. When you spend all your time talking about your past jobs, using language from your past jobs, using terminology from your past jobs, referring to responsibilities from your past jobs, you are positioning yourself for those old jobs, not the job you want. And this can look different. So for example, let's say you're trying to pivot from education to finance, okay? But you go into interviews and you're using terms like IEP, 504, lesson plans, curriculum. That is all very much education language and not finance language. You need to go into conversations around that finance role using their terms and terminology, whether it is depending on what area of finance, right? Like spreadsheets, ROI, balance, in the red, in the black, whatever it may be. You want to be using their words so that you start positioning yourself for that job, so that you start positioning yourself as an insider for that industry you're trying to land. But this also applies if you are staying in the same industry, but maybe what you're trying to do with your job start is land a higher level job. If you keep using language that positions you as an implementer, responsible for, served, implemented, created, those are all the jobs of a doer. But let's say you're trying to get promoted into a higher level director, VP job, you need to start talking about vision, strategy, implement, managing. You need to start talking at the level of the job that you want to land. So you cannot use language that positions you for your old jobs, because that makes it hard for recruiters and hiring managers to see you in the job you're trying to land. And a big part of marketing is that you are trying to paint a picture of yourself in the job that you're trying to land. That is how you increase your chances of landing that job. So if you spend all your time, whether it is on your resume, on your LinkedIn, in interviews, if you spend all your time talking about your old jobs, it doesn't tell recruiters or hiring managers why you are right for the specific job that you want, because you're not making it easy for them to see. And a part of you might be listening and you might be thinking, but I have the experience. They should just be able to see it and know that I'm qualified. No. The recruiter and the hiring manager's job is not to play pin the donkey, right? Like you're trying to pin the experience to the right role. They're trying to play guess who. Is she right? Is she wrong? No. Your literal job in a job search is to make it unmistakably clear that you are right for the role. Unmistakably. Like there should be no hesitation, no guesswork, no doubt in their mind. If they have to ask questions about your qualifications, you have already failed in talking about yourself in a way that gets you hired. So those are the two biggest mistakes that I usually see women make that keeps them from landing offers in the job search, is underselling your experiences and talking about the jobs that you've had and not the jobs you want. So one of the ways that you can fix your broken job search, there are many ways, but one of them is to talk about your experiences in a way that positions and markets you for the specific job that you want. So now I want to walk you through two places where you can do that, where you can talk about your experiences in a way that gets you hired, and that is on your resume and in interviews. These are two places where you really get the opportunity to position yourself as the right fit for the role, to really highlight your experiences and connect your experiences to the job that you want. So we'll start with the resume. It's important to recognize that your resume is not a historical document. Your resume is not a museum of all your professional experiences. Your resume is a marketing document. The goal of your resume is to market your fit and relevant accomplishments for the role that you want. That is the job and the goal of your resume. Your resume is a trailer. It's a teaser. They should look in your resume and say, we want to talk to this person some more to see if they're really right for this role. Your resume should make it plain, clear, prove that you can, in fact, do the specific job you're applying for, not the old jobs you've had. And there are obviously many things you can do to your resume to make it a really strong marketing document, but I want to focus specifically on the bullet points that you write, because that is the main way that you show your qualifications on resumes. So when you are writing bullet points on your resume, every bullet point, or I would say at minimum 90% of your bullet points, there might be a couple that don't do this, but you want all your bullet points to answer the question, so what? You want every bullet point to answer the question, so what? Meaning when you're writing a bullet point, the framework that you're going to use is task, then outcome. Like every single bullet point is going to follow the exact same framework, a task and an outcome. And adding the outcome is how you answer so what. And essentially, so what is, why do we care that you did this task? Your resume should not just be a list of your responsibilities, because a list of your responsibilities doesn't tell me anything about the impact that you are having in your career. Everybody has a list of responsibilities. If you just throw a list of your responsibilities on a resume, you don't stand out from all the other people that are looking for the exact same job as you. The way you stand out is by telling the reader why these responsibilities mattered, the difference you were able to make with these responsibilities, what changed because you had these responsibilities. And that's why you'll use task outcome as your framework for writing any bullet point. So essentially, the task is what you did. And a good way to think about it is talk about the skill and the tool that you leverage. So for example, if we're going to break this down even more, the formula for your resume would be skill, tool, outcome. And that could also be flipped to tool, skill, outcome, right? So the skill and the tool could come in either order, but those are the two things that make up the task you did. The outcome is why it mattered. The task is what you did. The outcome is why it mattered. Why do we care about this task? Did you increase efficiency? Did you increase retention rates? Did you reduce costs? Did you increase revenue? Did you increase customer satisfaction? Did you reduce user lag time on a software? Why do we care about this? And the way you will answer that question is you have to think about the job that you want. When you think about the job you're trying to land, what part of the company's bottom line does this job directly or indirectly contribute to? That answer is what you're trying to show that you have already done with your experiences. So stop just listing your responsibilities and thinking that you have shown them that you are qualified for the job. No, in this market, companies are looking for problem solvers, decision makers. Your resume should show how you take initiative, how you shift outcomes, how you make changes, depending on the kind of role you want, how you manage yourself and how you manage other people. That is the job of your resume. So let me give you an example. A resume that doesn't have an outcome might sound something like led team meetings using strategic planning skills and project management software. That does not tell me anything. It tells me what you were responsible for. You led some team meetings, you used your planning skills, and you used software to lead the team meetings, but 20 million other people can do the exact same thing. I'm going to see 25,000 other resumes that look the exact same way. Now, when you add an outcome, this could sound something like led weekly team meetings using strategic planning and project management tools such as Asana, improving team productivity by 20% and ensuring project deadlines were consistently met. Can you hear the difference in those two things? First of all, with the task, notice I named a specific tool. A lot of what I'll see on resume is you'll have like this tools section where you'll just list a bunch of tools. Meanwhile, you can integrate those into your actual bullet point. I said Asana, it could be Monday, it could be ClickUp, it could be Airtable. It literally doesn't matter. Whatever tools you can use. But I listed the skill, which is leading team strategic planning skills. Those are two skills. The tool, the specific tool, I didn't just say project management. I used Asana. And this, when you're thinking of tools, a lot of times some job descriptions will tell you the tools they want you to be proficient in. You can take that opportunity to mention those tools if you've used them. And then the key part here, improving team productivity by 20% and ensuring project deadlines were consistently met. If I wanted to get even more fancy, I might say ensuring project deadlines were met 100% of the time. This is now talking about why they care about my ability to lead teams, because I'm telling you we were more productive and we were meeting deadlines. Companies care about productivity. Companies care a lot about productivity because in their minds, if you're productive, you're not wasting money. In fact, if you're productive, you're saving money, right? The first bullet point just tells the reader of their resume what you did. And many people have done similar things to what you did. The second bullet tells them why you specifically are valuable, because it's not just what you did, it was the outcome you were able to achieve because of what you did. So that's how I want you to think about writing your resume bullet points to talk about your experience in a way that gets you hired. And I know that you might be thinking, okay, but I need examples from my own situation. How do I add numbers? How do I know where to add numbers? How do I figure out the so what? That's why when I work with my clients, they literally get an entire list of 10 different bullet template examples that they can plug and play their information in. And each one has different structures, whether it's skill, task, tool, outcome. Like, I show them what the different components of the bullet point needs to be and what it is focused on, whether it's focused on a work task, a responsibility, an outcome. And they can just plug and play their information, take those different bullets and mix and match it for their resume. And then when they're done building their resume, I get to look at it. Like, I read all my clients' resumes. I give them feedback. I help them rewrite bullet points, rewrite the summary section. That is the benefit of working with a coach, because then you have somebody who can literally cut down the time that it takes you to talk about your experiences in a way that you get hired, help you cut down the time and do it faster, and then do it better to actually get you hired. So that's the first place where you can talk about your experiences in a different way, is your resume. The second one is the interview. Again, remember what I said about marketing. You want to paint a picture of yourself doing the job. When most people are interviewing, all they do is answer the question they were asked and move on. And that is basic. I know you might be listening and thinking, well, duh, am I not supposed to answer the question? Yes, you are. And you want to help them see you in the specific job. If you think about the questions they ask, usually the place where they try to imagine you in the job is when they ask behavioral questions. And behavioral questions are usually questions that start with, like, tell us about a time when. Because of the nature of that question, they're literally asking about the past. Tell us about a time when you did something or experienced something. That means that you have to pull from your past experiences or your past jobs to tell them about your ability to do something in this job. But really, all that does is it leaves you telling a story of your previous jobs. And remember when I talked about the two mistakes most people make, is you spend your time talking about the job you had, not the job you want. So you have to change the way that you answer behavioral questions to help them see you in the job. And I know that you've probably heard of the STAR method of answering questions, S-T-A-R. I don't like the STAR method, because the way it's built, it's like situation, task, action, result, I think is how it's built. But people spend way too much time on the situation. They ramble for 5 minutes. Let's not do that. I'm going to give you a new framework that I want you to use, and you'll see how this can help really paint a picture of yourself in the job you want. So when you get behavioral questions, I want you to use the START framework. Not STAR, START. I'll tell you what START stands for, and then I'll go through each one and give you examples of, like, what goes into it. And then I'll share an example putting it all together. So START, first of all, is set the scene, trigger, action, result, tie in. That is it. You set the scene, you share the trigger, you share the action, you share the result, and you tie it in to the current job you're applying for. Literally, it takes you 2 minutes to answer a question using this format. So setting the scene is literally 30 seconds. I shouldn't say the word literally, but it takes no more than 30 seconds. And what you're really doing is just sharing what was the role you were in when this thing happened and where were you? Were you working alone? Were you working in a team? This is very, very brief, 15 to 30 seconds. Then you're going to share the trigger. The trigger could be either the problem, the need, or the challenge that led to you doing what you're about to talk about. And it has to connect to the question, right? If they're saying, tell us about a time you've had conflict, the trigger would be, I had a client who did not agree with how I implemented their proposal. Boom, bam, done. That is the trigger. 15 seconds, no more than 15 seconds to say the trigger. Then you'll tell us the action you took. And this is where we're spending most of our time. most of our time being 60 seconds. You're not rambling. But the action is the bulk of the response, because this is where you're going to tell us what you did, how you think, what skills and tools did you use to take the action, maybe what data informed your decision making, what decisions you took, who you consulted with, whatever is relevant. Don't rush through this phrase, but this is where you'll spend about 60 seconds telling us the action you took. And then you'll share the result of that action. What was the outcome? What changed? What improved? Be specific. And R is about 20 seconds to share the result. 20 seconds. And then this is where you paint the picture. This last step, tie in. In about 30 seconds, you are going to connect back to the job you're applying for. This is where you paint the picture. This is where you help them see you in the job that you are trying to apply for. So let me give you an example. I'm going to give you a real example. This was a candidate who was going from mental health coordinator to interviewing for a legal operations admin role. And I'm using this specific example because if you are moving into a new field, that last step, the tie-in, is even more critical, because that is how you connect your past experiences to the new roles in a way that makes it obvious to the recruiter or the interviewer why you are right for the role. Like, you have to explicitly bridge and build that gap, and you cannot assume that they can see how your skills transfer. You have to show it to them. And when you tie in the story to the job you're applying for, that's how you help them explicitly see that connection. Okay, so we're coming to this example of someone who was going from mental health to legal operations. And the question was, tell me about a time you managed multiple competing priorities under pressure. Okay, now, if you're feeling frisky, if you don't believe me that this could be done in 2 to 3 minutes, I want you to right now, you're listening to this on a phone, I assume, on some kind of device, go to the clock app, open a timer. I'm going to walk you through. I'm going to tell you the full response that my client gave to this. And I'll even briefly mention, like, for each step, if it is the scene, the trigger, the action. So even with mentioning that, you're going to hear how long it's going to take me to say this response. And it would be even shorter if I wasn't stopping to tell you what each phase of the response was. Okay? So seriously, I'm serious. I think I'm joking, but I'm not joking. And I'm saying this because people often hear these types of frameworks and they'll think, oh, that's going to take so long. Or you'll try to implement the framework, and instead what you end up doing is talking too long, rambling. You're not concise. So I really want you to hear how long it's going to take. Okay, so here it goes. The question was, tell me about a time you managed multiple competing priorities. Here's how you would set the scene. In my previous role, I worked as a mental health coordinator at a community health clinic. I was responsible for managing a caseload of 40 active clients at any given time, coordinating their care across multiple service providers and maintaining all the documentation and compliance requirements that came with the federally funded program. The trigger. We had a state audit announced with 2 weeks' notice at a time when two of my colleagues had just gone on unexpected leave, which meant that I was managing not just my caseload, but some part of their caseload as well. Action. So the first thing I did when we got that notice about the audit was I did triage. I built a priority matrix in our case management system that flagged which clients had active court dates, medication reviews, or mandatory check-ins within the audit window, because those were absolutely non-negotiable. Everything else I categorized by urgency and redistributed what I could to our community health workers. Then I focused on the audit itself. I first pulled all documentation for the past 18 months. I cross-referenced it against the state's compliance checklist and created a tracking spreadsheet that showed exactly where we were complete, where we had gaps, and what needed to be resolved before the audit date. I communicated daily updates to my supervisor during this process so that she wasn't caught off guard. And I ended up flagging 3 documentation gaps early enough that we had time to address them before the auditors arrived. The result, we ended up passing that audit with 0 findings, which was the first time our program had achieved that in 4 years. We also maintained full continuity of care for every active client during that period, and no one missed an appointment or had a lapse in services. The tie-in. When I think about this legal operations role, I can see a direct parallel. From what I understand about the role, a significant part of this position is going to involve tracking active cases and projects, coordinating across departments under tight deadlines, and maintaining documentation that has to be accurate and accessible at any point. And that is essentially what I was doing in a different context. The stakes then were clinical rather than legal, but I do believe that the operational discipline is the same, and I'm confident that I can bring that same approach to this role. That's it. That's the whole response. That took probably 2 minutes and 15 seconds max. And notice how at the end of that, I made it super clear why I can do this role. What that tie-in did was, first, it showed that I had researched the role, that I was thinking critically about what it would take to do the role, and that I had the skill to do something specific in the role. This is how in an interview, you can talk about your experience in a way to get hired, because you're gonna always be making direct connections between your skills, your experiences, your accomplishments, and the job you're applying for. So if you've been feeling like your job search is super broken, you're going on these interviews and not hearing back, or you're applying to jobs and not getting interviews, you need to shift how you're talking about your experience so that you can get hired. And the way to do that is on your resume and your interview are at least two good places to start, I would say. You want to focus on positioning yourself for the job you want, not just reciting what you've done and reciting your history. And if you do want more direct help to do this so that you can finally land a job you love, I would love to work together. Let's work together so I can help you, whether it's with your resume or with your interview. I give my clients interview scripts for a lot of different questions. I already mentioned the resume bullet points. We do mock interviews to help audit your skills. I would love to work together. If you go to hercareerdoctor.com/call, you can schedule a free career clarity call with me. And the whole goal of that call is so that I can better understand what is happening in your career, what are your goals, what barriers are you facing. And then on the call, I will share with you the three specific ways that I can help you reach your career goals. And then we can make a plan for how we can potentially move forward together. Again, that link is hercareerdoctor.com/call, C-A-L-L, where you can schedule a free career clarity call with me. Thank you for listening to this episode. I really hope you found it helpful and that it's going to shape the way you speak about yourself and your experiences moving forward so you can land a job you love. And I will catch you on the next episode. If you are done waiting for things to get better on their own and you're ready to get clear on what your next career move actually is, I want to invite you to schedule a free career clarity call with me. You can go to hercareerdoctor.com/call. On the call, we'll talk about where you are in your career right now, where you want to be, and exactly what it will take to help you hit those career goals so you can be fulfilled in your career while getting paid well. Again, that URL is hercareerdoctor.com/call. And that link is also going to be in the episode description below. I can't wait to talk with you.